There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to The Sound of London. This is Londonist Out Loud. I'm N. Quentin Wolfe.
Hey, baby, let me take you down. So we'll play some strange sights and sounds. You ain't never seen the light before. Just a stone's throw from your front door. Hey, baby, sit out me. See the peace of the air, land and the sea. Some creep, some saw. Far off place, no one clutters their view with your name, how you raised us.
Well, hello, hello, listener. It's first thing in the morning. I have been promised pork scratchings. I'm not sure how I feel about that this early, but even as I recounted that promise to you, my guest today is suggesting that perhaps I'm not going to get my pork scratchings. I feel shortchanged. This doesn't bode well. I'm with Vic Norman, who is the person who runs London Pub Tours. He's the founder of that business, and we're standing outside the Chancery Lane tube station. Good morning.
Good morning, Quentin.
What's this about no pork scratchings?
Well, had the pubs been open, and they're not open till 11, 12 o'clock today, I could certainly rustle up an excellent bag of pork scratchings. Perhaps later on, you know, the pubs might open a little bit early just for us, and I will buy you a bag on the house.
Sounds good to me. Okay, well, we're going to be wandering around some of the pubs in the area. This is, I should say, the first of a two-parter, because we figured there's so much history attached to London pubs. There are so many London pubs it's worth talking about that to try and squeeze them all into half an hour is a fool's errand. So what's the game plan? Where are we going to be visiting in this week's episode, Vic?
Okay, so you said there were many London pubs, about 6,000 London pubs. How is anybody to know where the best ones are today? We are going to break my original tour, the Dragon and Flagon, up into two parts, I believe, and there are six amazing pubs on this tour, so three in part one, three in part two.
And which three have you selected? Or do you want to keep them as a project? Do you want to keep them up your sleeve?
Kind of reveal them as we go, as a kind of magical mystery tour, as opposed to spoiling it for you and the listeners ahead of time.
Okay, let's get magical there. Should we say a quick word about your business? How long have you been in operation? Do you know what? I'm calling it a business, but I don't think
hobby.
You see it like
it's
that, do you?
No, well, it was... I've always loved London, I've always loved history, and I've always loved pubs. Back when I was at college, back in the mid-80s, friends and I used to say, wouldn't it be great to stay here and get paid for it and, you know, be careful what you wish for? Because 25 years later, I make my living from taking people to pubs. So it started as a hobby. A friend and I, I went to college with back in the 80s, said, let's try and find the oldest London pub. And we took 3 years and we went to all kinds of pubs and found some amazing ones. And then friends would come down to London, they'd say, you know some great pubs, please take us some great pubs. And we wouldn't. And so a kind of rough tour was born. And then somebody asked me if I would run one of my tours to raise some money for a charity. I thought, well, why not? And they raised £400 over two tours. And at that point, I thought, hang on a minute, perhaps people would pay me to take them to the pub. And so I launched the business about 4 years ago, and I had this tour, the tour that we're going to do right now, only this tour, and I ran it once a month. I now have 8 different tours, 3 times a week, top of Google, and I don't advertise. It's just gone exponentially mad. People seem to like it and come back for more and tell other people, and it's wonderful.
There is one form of advertising that I'm conscious of, because I feel we should describe you to the listener. They may have in mind a pinstriped fellow with a brolly, you know, one of those smart, eccentric fellows who wanders around doing a tour in the city of Westminster.
Yeah, that ain't me, really. All right, so somebody paid me the ultimate compliment once. They said, we've been on loads of tours, and every tour that we've been on, apart from yours, there's a clear distinction between the guide and the people being guided. And he said to me, with you, it feels like you're a mate taking us out for a drink. you just so happen to know quite a bit more. So I don't stand there with an umbrella. I don't need an umbrella. I've got bright red hair. That's all I need. And yeah, it's history, comedy and port scratchings. So I try and get involved. I love people. So I chat to people along the way, have a laugh and guide them. Sometimes it's a bit like nailing jelly to a wall, herding kittens. But it's always a fun evening, and I try, if as soon as it starts being fun, I'm going to stop doing it.
Well, we're going to start moving, I think, to our first destination. And as we go, I want to know about the practicalities of herding a group of people who have enjoyed all that London has to offer in pint form whilst on the tour. Does that present particular problems?
It depends on the group. So you're going to get people who say, we're having a stag night. And I said, let me stop you there. I don't do stag nights. I did one stag night, never again. You get people who are in for the banter, who are throwing stuff out at you and heckling, and that's all part and parcel of it. If you can kind of ride those punches and join in with everybody, fine. So I've never really had any trouble. I've left one person behind. So I can't go on. It's only pub four, mate. So I can't go on. Leave me here. It's like a battle scene in Hollywood. So we left him there, and he found his way home. But it's generally fine. Towards the end, people are straggling, and you've got to kind of chivvy them along, really, because you want to get to the end before last order. So there are six pubs, and on an evening tour, we normally start around about 7 p.m. So you can see we can get to the last pub 10:30, and so it's kind of it is organised, and you've got a certain amount of time in each pub. But it's also quite loose. But this is our first stop.
Well, now you are pointing, Vic, at one of those dragons on a stone pillar.
Or am I? Well, okay, so I stop here because most people tend to think of London as being a city. It's not a city, it's a mixture of two cities, which maybe many Londoners do know. But so you've got the city of Westminster, which lies a couple of hundred metres west of where we're standing here at Chancery Lane, and then you have the City of London, City of Markets and Money. And wherever you see a dragon, or at least the corporation of the City of London will tell you they're not dragons, but they are in fact griffins. I disagree with them. Griffins are mythologically half lion and half eagle. I'd say that was a dragon. So dragons guard treasure, in this case the financial district. And so you've got the shield of the City of London across the St George, short sword of St Paul, and across the road you've got Staples Inn, one of my favourite buildings in London, and the kind of the brand for old Holborn tobacco back in the 1970s, if you ever rolled your own in the 1970s. And it's the western edge, really, of the damage done by the Great Fire, which you see McDonald's to the left here in the kind of that horrible old kind of 1970s concrete building, and then you've got this beautiful timber frame building.
Can we just linger on that beautiful timber frame building?
Shall we?
That is one of the most elegant buildings in all of London.
Staples Inn. That's Staples Inn. It's the last inn of Chancery left intact. So inns of Chancery, they were medieval schools for teaching law, and now you've got ye olde Vodafone and various other businesses have taken up residence. But you can go through these little archways into a tree-lined courtyard beyond, which is absolutely lovely, and you could be miles away from the city, but yet only metres away from this very busy road in High Holborn.
So, what's the pub situation here?
Well, the pub situation, we're going to enter into the City of London now, go to pub number one, which is a little bit up the way from here.
Okay, so if you want to track our progress, we're now moving from Chancery Lane, obviously, into the city, as we just said.
Due east.
I just remembered that I've got a duty to perform, which is a shout-out to Simon, the black cabbie, who brought me here. And he asked what I was up to, and I explained what this interview is about. And he listed quite a number of pubs of interest. And he's got a contender for the oldest pub in London. And I'm keen to see whether this matches with yours.
What did Simon, the all-knowing cabbie, say was the oldest pub in London?
Shall I put it at a distance for him, just in case he's right? Simon's friend informed Simon that it was the Prospect of Whitby, unless he's correct, in which case Simon said it.
Prospect of Whitby is a wonderful pub, and it is the oldest pub on the river, but it's not the oldest pub in London.
Well, that was definitely Simon's friend falling down there, I'm afraid.
Well, a lot of people actually say it's Prospect of Whitby, but you go to Prospect of Whitby, as I did for the very first time, about 8 years, 10 years ago, and I said to them, have we found the golden elixir? Have we found the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow? Is this indeed the oldest pub in London? And the barman said, no, it's not. It's the oldest pub on the river.
Which leaves us tantalisingly close to the pot of gold.
I figured that question was coming. So the jury is still out, I'm afraid, Quentin, on this. And there are lots of different criteria. Has the pub had to have been in the same place with the same name and operating as a pub continuously since that time? Mm. Has the same pub moved to different premises? Has it been rebuilt? Did it change its name? Did it go out of business for 10 years and was a shoe shop? And so there are different criteria. But the clever money, the clever money. I could locate it, and I could even point it out to you later on tour.
Ooh.
We're not actually going in there today, but I will point it out to you.
You brought us to a halt outside a place.
I have, because this is one of my stops.
Ah, right, okay. So we're outside is a 10 or so story building in a very modern, probably 1990s style. It looks like the sort of place that you would do an establishing shot of if you were in some sort of North American crime drama. This is the headquarters where the Secret Intelligence Service works from. What are we doing here?
It's a good description. It doesn't feature at all on the tour, but I stopped here to talk about something else, which was to the back of you.
Oh, a statue. There we go.
It's all right. So we're at Hoban Circus, and the reason I stop here partly is to introduce pub number one, but also to say that this area, the whole area behind me, was up until recently a part of London that technically wasn't London. So it was owned, it's part of Cambridgeshire. So it's owned by the Bishops of Ely, a beautiful cathedral town in the centre of Cambridgeshire. So after the Reformation. So this road here is Hatton Gardens, I should explain, centre of the UK diamond trade. There are a lot less diamonds now than there used to be after the heist. And London's Jewellery Quarter, Hatton Garden, named after Sir Christopher Hatton, Queen Elizabeth I's favourite courtier. She gave the road to him. After the Reformation, though, the Bishops of Ely, who owned it, were forced to rent the land. Bishops of Ely owned all this, and it's what was called an enclave. So a separate part of London, I suppose the City of London is an enclave within the whole of what we call London, because economically, politically, it has its own police force, it has its own government, really. It's a separate place. And where we are now is also a separate place because it was Cambridgeshire. And pub number one is in the middle of old Cambridgeshire. So like when we used to watch things like The Dukes of Hazzard or these American shows where cops couldn't cross the county line or the state line because of separate jurisdiction, the same was true here. And the police had to be invited into old Cambridgeshire to catch criminals. Of course, they never were. So thieves would steal things out here in the City of London, rush into old Cambridgeshire, nip for a pint in pub number one. Police couldn't do anything about it. So pub number one, built originally in 1546, although they had a fire there, it's been rebuilt since, is wonderful for a number of reasons. First of all, they have the preserved remains of the cherry tree that Queen Elizabeth I once danced around in the pub itself. I mean, that is pretty stunning. 1546, that speaks volumes too. But also, it is London's most hidden pub. What I
well,
mean
I
by
certainly
that,
can't see it from where I am.
Well, you no, we're not there yet.
Oh, right.
Yeah, yeah. It's not that hidden. It's not the pub
well
of requirements from Harry Potter.
In fact, by that rationale, it would be extremely well hidden in almost every place.
By the rationale that you can't yet see it.
Correct.
Yeah. I don't know whether that makes it hidden. It's like saying the United States of America is now hidden.
Yes, it's hidden, completely hidden. Yes.
It is hidden. Smoke and mirrors.
There's a lot more secret London suddenly.
There is, yeah. All the bits that you can't currently see. Yeah.
Well, this opens up a realm of possibilities.
Should we go and see it?
Well, let's.
And then it will no longer be hidden.
A lovely statue there that I don't remember seeing, by the way, that we're walking away from, which is Albert, Prince Consort, cheerily raising his hat to people leaving the city.
Yes, and he's on a horse, of course, and the horse has how many legs raised? The horse has one leg up. Now, I've heard this, I don't know whether it's a myth or it's an actual code, but if you see an equine statue of a horse with one leg up, then the rider of the horse died in a certain way. And if two legs are up, then the rider of the horse died in a separate way, possibly in battle. And if the horse is upside down, it's the horse that died. Something like that. Now, I made that last bit up.
If the horse is upside down, that's because it raised all four legs.
Yes, and the horse is indeed dead too.
We're now in Cambridgeshire, which is a surprising development.
It's lovely in Cambridgeshire this morning.
Less bucolic than I imagined.
So, imagine you were now with a group of people, 20 people, and it was kind of dusk in London of an evening. You're wandering along and not expecting where the first pub is. And then we just
alleyway. Well, it won't surprise you to know this is all about jewellers, and we're now walking through a very innocuous archway. Above it, the Oldie Mitre, established 1546, and a fuller's sign, and that's pretty much all the clues you get.
But we do need to talk about the word ye, I think, because it does appear in a lot of pub names, and ye was never pronounced ye. It's a modern affectation to pronounce it as a Y. Y was a way of saying TH, so it was the. So when we say ye, they never said ye back then. So back in the 17th century, they're laughing their heads off at us.
And into a narrow courtyard, open at the other end, I see. So that makes it an alleyway, not a courtyard. And the old, that feels wrong.
Oldie was old, not oldie.
Ye olde mitre, as it is definitely called, is a tan-coloured building with lots of wood and tiny little windows and huge barrels outside.
It's a glorious place. It's a glorious place.
It's a glorious place.
It is. And up until recently, my son was barman here, which made it even more glorious. Not that I got free pints at all, but it's just there are two
bars. Did he gloriously get removed from his role when they discovered?
No, he no longer works there. But they've got the two bars here. It's tucked away off the beaten track. Down an alleyway. It's not on any road anywhere. The pub is in the middle of an alleyway. I mean, how beautiful is that already? A set of preserved remains of the cherry tree that Queen Elizabeth I danced around, which is in the first bar. As you go in that door, you can see, look around. It's got the trunk of the cherry tree that they've preserved. It's just a wonderful, small, medieval pub. The kind of pubs that you long for in winter with a blazing fire and a pork pie.
I should think, though, with that sort of size in a place so populous, this must be a thronging pub.
Well, you look at this alleyway, and obviously it's empty right now, but you imagine coming down here on a Friday evening with 20 people on a tour. This entire alleyway, from top to bottom, and the pub itself, both bars and upstairs too, are heaving people, because it's a very, very small pub. And, you know, Friday night, people, you know, have a drink after work and then they're home. And so we arrive here, this is pub number one, we'll arrive here about 7:10, typically, and, yeah, it's absolutely rammed.
Well, with the inside track as you have, what's the sweet spot? When's a good time to find a spot here?
9 o'clock on a Saturday morning.
Within the pub.
Oh, I see. I say the best time, really, is between the lunch rush and the dinner rush. I say dinner rush. Dinner rush starts as soon as people kick out of work and run till about 10. So, but if you want to come in here and get a seat and enjoy it in what's called the closet, which is the beautiful room off of the second bar, it's very rare to get a seat there. To come and enjoy that, if you come in either very, very early, 11 o'clock when they open, or you come in after, say, 1 o'clock and before 5, they're wonderful.
Well, we begin our journey towards the next stop on today's pub tour.
Absolutely. Okay, so
we're going out of the other end of the alleyway.
The bottom of this alleyway and turn left.
Are we now leaving Cambridgeshire?
No, we're walking further and deeper into Cambridgeshire, yes. Get your wellies on.
Now, this is a different prospect altogether. The buildings here look maybe Georgian in style to me. Very, very formal. Prim, even.
Yeah, and it's a private road. It's kind of expensive offices, really. Nice cars. And here we have St. Etheldreda's Church, which I'm going to stop and talk about. This is the first stop after pub number one.
Well, it's a big old place, and it kind of creeps up on you, doesn't it?
In that it was hidden and you hadn't known about it.
Yes, another of these hidden churches, yes.
Absolutely, yeah.
Like that's St. Paul's one.
That's hidden, and as soon as we see it, it'll hove into view, I'm imagining.
I think my head's swimming with this new concept.
It is bizarre, but we'll go with it. So this is St. Etheldreda's. It's the oldest Catholic church in England. So something to be said. It's the 13th century crypt down here. You can hire this out for private parties. The crypt is absolutely stunning. St. Etheldreda herself, she was a 13th century East Anglian warrior princess. Okay, she's exactly like Xena. Okay, don't spoil it for me. She had three sisters, Etheldreda. She, Ethelberga, Withberga, and my personal favourite, Sexberga.
Delicious. Ethelberga.
Well, it's all got all your main food groups, everything you need from a wonderful night in. But being a lot less meaty than her sisters, she rose to become queen of that particular region. And it's said that when she died, like Anne Widdecombe, her body lay up.
Hold on. Before. Can I just vet this joke before we get whisper it in my ear?
But I'll miss that.
Listener, there's no way we can include that one.
I don't think so. But anyway, it's said that when she died, her body lay pure and uncorrupted for 450 years. So, did a clean version. Clean, I say. I did the non-libelous version, I should say. Okay, so this is it's Ely Place and Ely Court.
Well, come here, we could just dig into that. So in the 1700s, her body was still around and they're looking fine.
Yeah, I think that's what's meant by pure and uncorrupted.
Says a who?
I said the church elders.
Oh, them.
Yes. Mm. I'll leave it up to you to decide how valid and real the information is. So, what else? It's one of only two buildings in London that date back to the reign of Edward I. So, what was Edward I? 1272, 1307, something like that. The only church in London to have reverted back to the old faith being Catholicism, of course, since the Reformation, so Protestant became Catholic.
Now, is that why they've got the randomised stained glass windows? So I've heard about this with, I think it's Winchester Cathedral, where during the Reformation they knocked all the stained glass out and locals hid the stained glass. And when they went to replace it all, they couldn't remember the order for it, so you ended up with this kind of crazy paving thing. I don't know.
I don't know. Well, this window down here is clearly just not telling a story, unless, of course, it's kind of telling the story of Pablo Picasso's version of the Bible, because it does look kind of in rather cubist. I think I could pick out a bird in that top window, but these ones do. Particularly seen from the inside. It's very different from the outside. But, yeah, I suppose if they depicted scenes of a Catholic nature, they were taken down rather rapidly and preserved. So here we are in Ely Place. This would be the place where, traditionally, you'd come to get the finest strawberries. So, you go back 300, 400, 500 years ago, it was all strawberry fields. It's Shakespeare's Richard II. The Duke of Gloucester, I think it is, says to the Bishop of Ely, when I was last in Holborn, I saw good strawberries in your garden there. I do beseech you, send for some of them. And so they beseeched, and so they were sought after. And every year they have a strawberry fair here. The pub brings out its beer, the church opens its crypt for people to wander through, and through there, which is Bleeding Heart Yard. Lady Elizabeth Hatton went out dancing one night, 1600s. She never returned. Her body was found ripped limb from limb and are still beating Bleeding Heart there on the road, which is why it's Bleeding Heart through there. They come out and they sell strawberries and there's kind of street games and everything. And it's June every year. They have a strawberry festival here, strawberry fair.
There's an interesting termination to this street, which is entirely blocking the end of it. A 30 foot high brown brick wall with three large closed off arches in it. It almost looks like railway arches that have been filled in, but that's clearly not what it was.
It does look that way, and I thought that at one point, but yeah, clearly it's not. But we are in the area, are we not, of... We are of Holborn Viaduct, the height changes, and so they kind of adjusted for it just around the back of here where Holborn Viaduct is. But that black gate that stands in the leftmost arch is the gate through to Bleeding Heart Yard.
Well, I suspect we're going to be going the other way as we move to our next spot.
We're not going through the wall. No, it's just a platform 9 3/4. We're heading out of Old Cambridge and back to the City of London now.
Ahead of us, reaching up into the sky, three cranes putting together yet another signature skyscraper of some sort.
And an interesting fact is that there are now more cranes in London than there are in the rest of the country combined. So is that signs of new shoots? I don't know.
It says to me that business is doing very well.
So I'm here, the new shoots of recovery, which is about business is doing very well, but hopefully they'll trickle down to help people do well. Who knows?
Oh, are we not doing trickle up?
Trickle, how does that work? Trickler?
Trickle up.
Which is a kind of a three-coloured broad flag.
It's how you learn French, isn't it? No, trickle up is we give them our money.
Yes, I think that seems to be the case. Trickle down hasn't really worked at all, has it? Rich people will feed us scraps from their table. Yes, there's the lie within austerity.
Meanwhile,
it's a banker's trick. Meanwhile, we're on Charterhouse Street. If we were to head down there, and you can see the kind of pale green domes rising in the distance of Smithfield Meat Market. There's been a meat market on that site for, just over 1,000 years, of present buildings are Victorian. And there are there are all kinds of amazing pubs in and around Smithfield. Some of them licensed to open early for the meat market workers, so you can go and get a pint 8 o'clock in the morning.
I used to frequent one of those. I used to do an overnight job, and I went into one of those on a regular basis. And very often you'd have somebody come in from the meat market with a full dead animal slung over their shoulder and blood all over their apparel. It was an otherworldly experience.
Was it a very narrow pub?
I think it might have been called the Fox, but
Fox and Anchor.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's on my Newson Tanker tour, another tour that goes around Smithfield and Clerkenwell. That's the pub that's licensed to open early. And they have the finest English breakfast, full English, I have ever had in my entire life.
Yeah, I can vouch for that.
Yeah. They source it from 2 metres away in the meat market, of course. But we're not heading down there, we're heading further west now.
Well, now this brings us face to face again with the fellow on the horse. And the glazed curve of a very elegant 33 Holborn.
It's just Sainsbury's headquarters.
Oh, is it really?
It is.
No, I don't believe you. There's no trolleys outside.
It's the administrative headquarters as opposed to the supermarket headquarters.
Oh, I assume all the same they're pushing their files around in trolleys with little infants in the front, no?
I think they do. I think they do. So we're walking back up High Holborn. And so Holborn, many people pronounce as Holborn, but is the jury's still out on that. Is it Holborn? Is it Holborn? Is it Holborn or Holborn? So I prefer Holborn.
Do you know where the name comes
I won't
from?
Pronounce the L, I just won't.
Well, we won't make it.
It's one of my things. It's like people who say pin interest instead of Pinterest. It's just one of those annoying things.
I find pin number annoying as a phrase.
In that it's tautological.
Precisely so.
Yes. Personal identification number.
Now we've got the Inn of Court pub on the other side of the street there. Very floral.
Recently refurbished. Fuller's pub, up until about 3 months ago, was known as the Melton Mowbray, which only other claim to fame is pork pies, I believe. But it was the Melton Mowbray. Now it's the Inn of Court.
And we're off past Furnival Street to our left. Now, is this a normal part of your tour, that you go back down there and then come back to the same place again? I always imagine tours being circuitous in some way.
It's circuitous so far.
Well, that's true.
Yeah, I suppose that is odd, but I mean, I don't want to miss out that pub. And it was a natural pub number one. And so, yeah, we have looped back. And at this point, as we approach Chancery Lane tube station for the second time, people's anxious faces as I drop them off here and say thank you very much for coming. But no, we are going beyond to pub number two, but yes, that one is on a little loop, if you like.
So in terms of just deciding which pubs belong with which, how do you go about making those sort of selections, or is it a little bit
deciding which
arbitrary?
Pubs go on which tour? Okay, so when I'm researching a new tour, which is because a new area of London, so I've got 8 different tours, I ask people, I do some research, find maybe a dozen of the finest pubs in that whole area, check them all out and pick the best ones. And sometimes it works out, well, there's a great pub over there, but it's just too far away. So sometimes there's a great pub, but then there's no history along the route. Sometimes there's a fantastic route, but there's no pubs on it. And it's quite difficult to try and pick out maybe the top 5 or 6 pubs in within walking distance within a given area. But normally it works out. So I've got 8 different tours, so it must be doing something rather well.
So I was wondering if the tours themselves are named in particular ways. I wondered if there was, if you'd somehow had to stitch together thematic connections between the...
Well, yeah, so all my tours, first of all, they sound like pubs. So this is the drag.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And Flagon. I have other pub tours, the Suit and Flute, the Noose and Tankard, the Jar and Marbles, the Strand and Goblet. So each pub tour, first of all, sounds like a pub, the pub tour name. It's got one thing you can drink out of, so in this case a flagon, earthenware container, and one thing that's historical about the area, so the Dragon and Flagon. Actually, the Dragon and Flagon comes originally from a, what's his name? Danny Kaye. Danny Kaye film, The American Knight in the Court of King Arthur. So the Dragon and the Flagon is the pestle with the vessel. That one, it might not ring yet. So my next one I'm doing is the Chalice and Palace, which also comes from the Danny. So I've borrowed and stolen from Danny Kaye. But that was a wonderful scene where they've got all these goblets and cups on the table, and the vessel is the brew that is true, etc., etc. Yeah.
Before we arrive at our next destination, I think we're going to throw a word from our sponsor before you, listener, and see what you think of it.
We have teamed up with audible.co.uk to offer you a free audiobook of your choice. All you have to do is register for 1 month free trial to claim your free audiobook. There are over 150,000 to choose from. The 30-day free trial means you can choose a free audiobook, which is yours to keep whether or not you decide to cancel in the trial period. And there's more good news. If you trialed the service over 12 months ago, the good people at Audible are giving you a chance to get your hands on another audiobook for free. So sign up at www.audible.co.uk/Londonist.
Londonist Out Loud is free every week. You can support the show and Londonist via the Londonist shop, where you'll find excellent gift ideas, including London postcard t-shirts, the Secrets of the Tube DVD, chunky logo mugs, tote bags, hoodies, the Inspector Sands tea, and the Londonist Oyster card holder. Treat yourself, support us, and share your love of London at londonist.com/shop.
You're listening to Londonist Out Loud. I'm N. Quentin Wolfe, and with me is Vic Norman. He is a London pub tour guide. Amongst how many?
Amongst how many pub tour guides?
Yes, do you run into other pub tours as you go about your business?
Oh, the turf wars are brutal. There are other companies that do run London pub tours. There are, you know, the famous big London walk companies who, amongst the hundreds of different walks they've got, a couple of them are pub tours. And then there are people who have dedicated things that I do. There are even pub tour companies that take a group of people, and I've seen them, and they say, that's a great pub, go and have a look at that, and now we'll move on. What is the point of that? You know, if you're going to have a pub tour, surely you should experience going in and possibly enjoying a pint of finest ale.
Well, that certainly works as a client of yours. For this podcast, though, we're going to do the dry version simply because it's going to turn a bit Derek and Clive, I suspect, if we start tippling along the way.
Yeah, then it's 10 o'clock in the morning.
It's probably a mercy. But we are stopped on High Holborn. Why are we here? Not why are we here in the bigger sense, though.
What?
We haven't got time.
Why are we here, as in life, the universe and everything?
Or not that one.
Not that. Why are we here? We're doing a pub tour podcast, Quentin.
No, not that one either.
Not that one. Okay. So I'm about to introduce to you pub number two. Which,
yes,
that was
that
the
one.
Reason. Good, we got there in the end. Which is, as I always say, people say, what's the best pub in London? I say, I don't know what the best is, but my favourite is this pub. My favourite pub anywhere is this pub, the City of York on High Holborn. Why is it my favourite? First of all, when they built this pub, the craftsmen, the tradespeople who built this pub, their intended aim was to build the most idyllic pub. That was their aim, and I think that they succeeded. It should really have been the pub from Harry Potter. When you go in, it is that magical. It wasn't, but I did think of writing off to Universal Studios at one point. They used to have the record for having the longest bar in England. That record has now been taken, I think it's by Leeds University. I know it's a university in the north of England. I think it's Leeds. The vats, the barrels that you'll see above the bar, all along the length of that bar, the largest of them contained 1,000 gallons of wine, and they drained them all in the Blitz. And the Germans are coming, save the wine, as the English wartime priorities, clearly.
But can you give us a visual on 1,000 gallons of wine? What would that look like?
Yeah, easily. Big. Well, very big.
We've all got a clear picture
of
that.
So the largest barrel, you could stand in it. I mean, you're a tall man. You could stand in it, Quentin, and still be covered in wine. Yeah, you need a snorkel and a bikini, but apart from that, you're sorted, I think.
Good to go.
But I mean, if that wasn't enough for you, it's also a Samuel Smith's pub. I don't know what you or your listeners know about Samuel Smith's. It's a brewery in Tadcaster in Yorkshire, 15-20 miles from York. They have 35 pubs in London.
And this is where you go to get a pint that's cheaper and a good quality pint.
Well, yes and no. I'm going to say yes because, yeah, generally the beer on tap there is cheaper than other places. But, and a lot of people criticise Samuel Smith's for their beer on tap, but what they don't necessarily know is their bottled beer selection. So let me tell you a bit about Samuel Smith's model, in that they specialise in traditional historic buildings. This is one, and the two Samuel Smith pubs on our tours today. Everything that you buy in a Samuel Smith pub is their own. You can buy nothing branded, from the crisps and nuts to the cola and lemonade, to the brandy, scotch, rum, whatever it is, it's all Samuel Smith's. They've banned music and all screens from every single one of their pubs, believing that pubs are about talking, laughing, drinking. Kind of agree with them. Their beers, they have the only organic strawberry beer in the entire country. They also have cherry, organic cherry, raspberry and apricot. I wouldn't bother so much with the apricot. They're the finest chocolate beer I've ever had, chocolate stout. They do a beautiful porter, traditional East London rich malty drink called a taddy porter, the finest wheat beer on draft. They won the National Award for Stouts with their oatmeal stout, and on it goes. And that's Samuel Smith's for you.
Well, here we go, the City of York. Another perilous spelling here. City spelled C-I-T-T-I-E. Beer brewed at Yorkshire's oldest brewery.
Yeah, let's...
And through we go.
Have a quick look.
Last night's empty is still in evidence. And you feel you're stepping into Victoriana here. The lights aren't on yet, so it's still all a bit gloomy. We're peeking around the corner here. Well, this is quite something. The vats loom over us. Up above, we have a beamed wooden ceiling, a vaulted ceiling. And, this is like stepping back in time in the most positive of ways.
It's absolutely magical. I often, you know, so I'm leading 20 people in here. I'll walk in, I'll stop, I'll turn around and watch their mouths drop to the floor as they appreciate the beauty of this room. I've been in this pub thousands and thousands of times, and still it has the capacity to just absolutely stun and impress. It's beautiful.
And through a window here, we can see what may be a dining room or a private area, a saloon bar, perhaps.
Yeah,
so do I mean a lounge bar?
Yeah, I think we could call it a lounge bar. Sofas and armchairs to kind of sit back and relax in if you're tired of the main bar.
There's something rather at odds there, isn't there? That pub in particular is a nighttime pub.
What makes it a nighttime pub, in your opinion?
Well, the disconnect between what's going on in there and then suddenly you come out into the daytime and you think, oh, it's actually daytime.
But that, I think, is what is wonderful about pubs in general, and in particular great London pubs, in that you're out here in your busy working day. People are milling around, they're rushing, they've got their heads down, as they do in big cities, kind of heading off as quickly as they can to wherever they're going. And you walk into a pub and it's a different world. It's a slower world. It's a world of beauty and beer, and you can relax. It's like when I was a child going into the cinema. You go to the cinema in the daytime and you totally blown away and transported to another place, and then you come out into the bright sunlight after being in a dark cinema, and you're reminded that the world is a harsher place.
Well, up High Holborn we go. We're going to cross the road now. Getting people across the road safely, of course, being one of a tour guide's central responsibilities. In your case, your flock is worse for wear.
Well, yeah, I said earlier that there are pub tour companies that point out pubs to you, but they don't go in and have a drink. And I think the main reason for that is that if they're guiding people around, as I do, who have had a few drinks, that they worry about the possible litigation if somebody wanders off into the road by accident and gets run over. But I've never had a problem. I always tell people, look, you know, we will be crossing roads. You will be drinking alcohol. You're responsible. I will do my best, but you're responsible for your own safety. Don't just wander off into a road thinking that I'm going to guide you to the promised land. And, you know, every now and then you get somebody who's drunk a few and tries to run across the road. But, there have never been single fatality. Honest.
I hope that's on your website. No fatalities so far.
Exactly. It's a record I'm proud of.
You can have a fatality counter in the bottom right corner.
I do, and it stayed resolutely at zero. It's something I'm very proud of, that statistic. So this is Chancery Lane. Started off at Chancery Lane Tube Station. This is Chancery Lane proper. And if you imagine walking down here... and it was dusk. You come to these beautiful buildings. It's like stepping back in time. On our left, we have the London Silver Vaults. Doesn't look that much from the street, but we have two subterranean bat cave levels containing the world's largest collection of retail antique silver.
Who does all that silver belong to?
The London Silver Vaults. They sell it. And then if you buy it, then it belongs to you.
Oh, so they're not holding it in storage then? Because we came through Hatton Garden where they're storing, or failing to store, things for other people.
It's not storing as well as they used to, diamonds.
But they've gone into distribution.
They have gone into distribution, yes. They're democratising the sale of diamonds. Okay, so this here is Lincoln's Inn Fields, home to London's largest public square. If you walk through these gates and around, come to London's largest public square, Lincoln's Inn Fields. It used to be Albee Fields and lots of solicitors' offices now, because this is the heart of legal London, Chancery Lane and around here. And if you look up to the stacks of chimneys, and it's particularly good on a podcast, obviously.
They'll be Tudor, I'd say.
They do look like that. So they're reminiscent, if you like, of the chimneys at Hampton Court Palace, and which I would say were the finest chimneys in London. Not that I'm running the risk of deteriorating this podcast into an exceptionally sad and pathetic talk about chimneys. But
nothing wrong with a fine chimney.
No, I agree. I love a stack. And each one of those chimneys in the stack is carved slightly differently. It's absolutely beautiful. So the Law Society's down here. There's Lincoln's Inn Fields. Chancery Lane is a beautiful place to be. In between pubs.
I'm going to have to question your judgment here. You called attention to the chimneys.
I did.
And then dissed the chimneys.
Did I diss the chimneys?
You even dissed looking at chimneys.
No, what I was attempting to convey here was that my pub tours are slightly more fun than a two-hour podcast on chimneys. Slightly. Well, I thought we'd stop here and talk about something else, first of all, before we talk about pub number three, which is a process. So we're standing outside a blue plaque. And of course, it's illegal for me to walk past the blue plaque, being a pub tour guide. But this is the blue plaque to John Thurlow, who in 1652, yes, it is 1652, was Secretary of State, lived here, Secretary of State in Cromwell's government. That's kind of a strange time in London's history between 30th of January 1649, when King Charles I somewhat lost his head outside Banqueting House. 11 years until his son, King Charles II, restored the monarchy. He was also Cromwell's spy master, or one of Cromwell's spy masters. Of course, he needed spy masters because it's a very fraught time in English history. An interesting thing about Cromwell is that he is responsible for the term, as far as I believe, warts and all, because he sat for a court painting once, and Cromwell, he was a warty fellow. I mean, he was practically a toad. And the court painter was doing a kind of a medieval version, I suppose, of what we would now call airbrushing, attempting to paint Cromwell as if he was a human being rather than a toad. Cromwell nipped around the front, looked at the painting, said, no, paint me warts and all. And that's where it comes from. This beautiful building in front of us, the light stone and the cupolas, or is it cupola? No, cupola sounds good. Mini domes, is in fact King's College Library.
Well, that's an impressive piece of architecture.
Absolutely.
No chimneys, so you're okay.
Well, no, there must be chimneys, mustn't there?
Are you sorry now that there are no chimneys to look at? Are you beginning to feel their absence?
I'm not sorry that there are no chimneys to look at, but
I think
in
you
old
are.
Building, how would they have heated it? They wouldn't have removed the chimneys. What are those things up there? They're chimneys.
I think you're into chimneys. Go on, you like a bit of chimney, don't you?
I confess. I'm going to come out here on the Londonist podcast and admit it to the nation. I do fancy a chimney.
I sort of feel we need to do a cold finish to the episode right there. This is an interesting one, isn't it? I mean, I've no idea whether it's as interesting on the inside, but this seems
it is interesting.
A little bit contradictory. We're on the opposite corner to the library here, the Knights Templar Free House, and it's this sort of colonnaded building that you would never think is a pub. It might certainly have been converted into a bar of some sort. What's this place about?
It's called the Knights Templar. It's a beautiful old building. It was originally a pub, I don't believe.
Oh, there we can get a bit of a look in here. Some chandeliers.
Well, why don't we stop here on the tour? And I tell them because the next pub we're going to is even more stunning and even more amazing than this pub. But it's called the Knights Templar, of course, because we're about to enter into Templar land, Templar territory. So this is Carey Street. I was talking about the oldest pub in London, or the Clever Money's in the oldest pub. If you look up ahead there on the right-hand side, the sign of the seven stars... opposite here, which is the Royal Courts of Justice, is seven stars on Carey Street. Looks like a little French bistro inside. It's run by a cat. Well, the cat technically owns the pub. I've forgotten the name of the cat.
What on earth are you talking about?
No, the cat's called... Is it Tom Paine? The original cat died. It's run by a woman called Roxette or Roxanne. Roxanne, that's it. She's quite... eccentric lady who runs the Seven Stars, and she has a cat. The cat practically owns it. The cat wears a kind of ruffled collar. It's famous. Great herring in there.
When you say the cat owns the pub, what do you mean?
I don't mean in a legal sense.
Okay.
The kind of administers everything, although maybe it has a hand in the herring selection.
A paw.
Oh, yes. No, I do know a little bit about cats. Yes, they do have paws. Yes. I do believe it's responsible for the herring selection, but it just wanders around. The cat's like that, wandering around and just sits where it wants, and it's iconic.
Can we have a little squint at the place itself?
We can.
The buildings along this street are notable. It might just be by comparison, but I think it's fair to call them a little bit dumpy. The doors kind of low, the buildings overall squat. We've got Legastat here on the corner. That does look like the sort of thing that could easily have been removed by now. Not because I wish ill against Legastat, or Legastat. Oh, that's what they are. They make copies for legal folk.
Yes, they do. It's been the heart of legal London, of course.
And there we go, the Seven Stars.
Yes. Which I do believe the Clever Money is on, as I said, for it being the oldest pub in London.
Now, how do you go about verifying that sort of thing? Do you bother, or do you? There must be some sort of process you go through.
As I said, the jury is still out, and so you do a lot of research. And some people say, "Well, we're the oldest, and we've had a license the longest, or we've been on this site for the longest." But as I said, pub names change. If it was destroyed in a fire and rebuilt, is it the same pub? If it went out of business for 10 years and then came back into being a pub, does that count?
Well, I understand that, and those questions seem almost philosophical, but what I wondered is, if somebody says, well, we've had our licence since date X, do you then go and try and validate that claim?
The oldest...
Because everybody's going to say they've got the oldest pub in London, aren't they?
I don't know if it would be easy to claim that, but I suppose because historical documents have been lost, etc., that it's difficult. I mean, we're already established where the oldest licensed premises are. But licensed premises aren't necessarily the same as it being the oldest pub, because you may have had a pub without a licence, you may have lost your licence, etc. So licences were very very precious things to have a licence, which is why a lot of pub history is still around, where many buildings have been destroyed. But the White Hart on Drury Lane at least claims to be the oldest licensed premises, and there's nobody, as far as I know, contending that claim. Not necessarily the best pub or the oldest, but there's been a pub on that site with that name possessing a license.
We are about to emerge on a larger street. It looks as though somebody has thrown out all their shredding out of the window. The place is covered in a confetti of presumably legal documents.
It's a veritable ticker tape.
Here we go. This is a beautiful object in the middle of the street just here. Can we have what?
Are you going to ask me what it is?
Well, is this Temple Bar, or have I made that up?
You haven't made it up. It is indeed Temple Bar. So here we are standing on the edge of two cities again. So we're facing the City of London and behind us the City of Westminster. This is Temple Bar. This is where you would have stopped originally to have paid your customs, your taxes, before entering the walled City of London, a mile further east of here at Ludgate. Ludgate being one of the seven ancient gates of the walled City of London. All the gates are gone now. The original Temple Bar would have spanned here at Fleet Street stroke the Strand. You can still see it if you go up by St Paul's. It's as you approach St Paul's on your left, I forget the name of the square now, but it's the entrance to that square. It stood in St Theobald's Park in Hertfordshire for many, many years, but they brought it back to London. It stands next to St Paul's, on the left of St Paul's, was the original Temple Bar, which is a kind of arched way with a couple of arches for traffic span here. So here we are now, this is outside London's most impressive Gothic building, the Royal Courts of Justice. If we look west...
Just before we skip on, actually, yeah. Could you paint a word picture of the Temple Bar? As it stands here now. Before us, yeah.
Okay, so it stands on Traffic Island in the middle of the boundary between Fleet Street and the Strand. It's a ornate, elaborate pillar. On one side you have, as we can see from here, is Prince Albert, consort to Victoria. On the other side is Victoria. Atop the column is London's most impressive dragon, or griffin, depending on your viewpoint. Beautiful black dragon at Temple Bar, representing, as I say, the entrance to the City of London. So if we look west there, there's the Strand, and the Strand continues past Aldwych onto Trafalgar Square. That is the Church of St Clement Danes, rising there at Aldwych. Now, St Clement Danes is interesting for a couple of reasons. First of all, it's the lead church, the centre church for the Royal Air Force. And also it's one of two churches that are fighting an unholy battle, in that both St Clement's churches claim to be the St Clement's of oranges and lemons fame. Now, when I take a tour of Americans and I start talking the story, they're all looking around nervously and they have no idea what I'm talking about. But we, of course, know that oranges and lemons said the bells of St Clement's, the nursery rhyme that we sang as children, or to our children. And every hour they will ring out oranges and lemons here at St Clement Danes here at Aldwych. The other church that is fighting this battle was St Clement's Eastcheap. Now, the clever money is on them and not on St Clement Danes. And so why is it called Temple Bar? So all of the area south of here to the river was Templar land, Templar territory. It's a mystical band of warrior knights, ostensibly protecting pilgrims on the road to Jerusalem, yes, but meanwhile they were gathering a lot of land, a lot of power, a lot of money, so much so by the year 1312, King was getting nervous, Pope was getting a bit rattled. They disbanded the Knights Templar, gave all of their land and all of their possessions to another order, the Knights Hospitaller of St John, who we know today as St John's Ambulance, basically. They in turn leased all of their land to lawyers, which is why this area is legal London, and why two of the Inns of Court, if you want to practice as a barrister in England and Wales or be affiliated internationally, you belong to one of the four Inns of Court. They are Gray's Inn, Lincoln's Inn, which are further north of here, and you have Inner Temple and Middle Temple, which are down here. And the famous Temple Church off Fleet Street, made famous by the Da Vinci Code, is just a little way off here. Anyway, we're about to go to pub number three, which ends this segment, this section of the tour. Pub number three was built in 1888, replaced two former pubs that stood on this site to make way for the Law Courts branch of the Bank of England. It was built in 1888, right next here to where we are, the Royal Courts of Justice.
Well, that's something I didn't know, that the Bank of England had branches.
Yeah, they had. Exactly. They had a legal side, a law courts branch. That lasted until 1975, when the Bank of England, in its wisdom, decided they no longer needed such a branch. And so they closed it down. It stayed empty for 20 years until the brewery, in this case Buller's, Chiswick, London Brewery, bought the building and opened and spent some years restoring it. However, it's a listed building, and they couldn't change very much at all about it. All they could do was put a bar in the middle. The clock in there is forever stopped at 10 minutes past 12, the time of the last financial transactions done in that branch. Also, it stands right in the middle of two famous buildings in London history. One, the barbershop, owned by Sweeney Todd, Demon Barber of Fleet Street, and the other, the pie shop, owned by his lover, Mrs. Lovett. And so they'd come into Sweeney, a little bit off the sides, please, Sweeney, and Sweeney said, I think I could do a bit more for you than that. And Sweeney would take them to the tunnels and vaults underneath this building. They still exist. Chop them into tiny pieces. Take them to Mrs. Lovett, where she would make them into the most delicious pies. This story is, of course, completely fictional. Don't tell the Americans they love that kind of thing. Anyway, this pub, the Old Bank of England, is by far the most beautiful pub in London. Let's go and see. So,
this way to the Old Bank Beer Garden, says one of the pub signs, and below it, Mrs. Lovett's Lair. Yet another example of London seeming to love its gruesome legends.
They do. Good couple of grisly stories so far today.
So let's talk about the interior of this pub.
Well, it's just gorgeously ornate. 20, 30-foot ceilings, gold leaf on the ceilings, the rich velvety curtains, you know, that drop 20 feet, the golden chandeliers, the staircase leading up to the second floor where you could overlook the entire bar, rich paintings on the wall, it's the marble, it's just absolutely glorious.
How often do you pop into this place for a pint yourself?
I don't come up here just for a pint myself, but the tour that we're doing is probably the most popular out of all my 8 different London pub tours, and so, you know, so I'm in here regularly. I know the manager, and it is just a beautiful place to be.
Well, I've got a bunch of questions to ask about your relationship with various pubs and with alcohol. Perhaps as we go into the next pub, but that's going to be next week, because for this week's episode we're going to sign off here and we'll try and tease it a little bit. What sort of thing could we expect to look forward to on next week's show?
Well, so next week we're going to 3 more pubs, including the pub that was written about in A Tale of Two Cities. It's 7 floors of beery wonder. The finest port scratchings in London, the bagged port scratchings, the only Art Nouveau pub left in London, and more besides.
For this week.
Oh, yes.
For this week.
Watch this space.
That was the last orders bell, and we look forward to getting another round in with you, Vic Norman. Thanks very much.
Thank you, likewise.
My heart aches for some far off place, no one could have been.
And that's all for this week. Thanks for this week to my guest, Vic Norman. Thanks to Bernie Barkley and Mark Barr. Theme and incidental music was by Songs from the Howling Sea. I'm N. Quentin Wolfe.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.